Okay, let's fix the mic somehow once again. So, I don't know why this gets rearranged every time, but it does. All right. How are you doing, Reg? Okay? Good, good, good. What do you say? Feel like podcasting today? Yeah, so do I. All right, let's do this thing then. You ready to go? Good. Trigger finger ready? That's the most important thing. Well, I don't know if it's the most important thing, but it's up. It's right up there. Okay, let's do this thing. Star, smile, strong. Put it in the book. Episode 452. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, listening is always key element to this entire process, but we also need you to spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be everybody's. So get out there. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, as usual, if you like what you hear, you can always go to WGNradio.com, go to the podcast section of the website, and then hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and there you will find a great way to start your new year. Make a resolution to listen to this podcast every week. Hopefully you won't break that by the end of February, but but we make it easy for you. You just go there, and there they are. So keep scrolling down and loading more, including this one, episode number 452. So here we are in the middle of January, a little past the middle now, and it's been quite a it's been quite a couple of weeks, a lot jammed into these first, 3 weeks of the year? My gosh. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 4 years. Everybody's talking about the new presidential administration. In fact, as we speak today, this podcast gets posted on the day of Donald Trump's inauguration, January 20th. Donald Trump has sort of given people a warning to strap in. Things are going to be happening and happening fast. And if that's the case, wow, we really need to strap in because things have already been happening very quickly in this year. In 2025, we already have had three, and today or this week, we certainly will have the fourth. Any kind of presidential inauguration is a huge, huge deal. America is the leader of the free world. You can make an argument that it's the most powerful country in the world. And so when there is a shift in power, when there is a shift in leadership, that's a big deal, not only internally, but externally. Not only for the country, but for the entire world. So here we are, less than a month into 2025, and we've already had four major occurrences. Now, they haven't all been positive, thankfully. One of them, and we'll keep our fingers crossed, that it's a long-term positive, was the recent ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas to end that 15-month war that has been going on since October 7th of 2023. And hopefully the return, ultimately, within the next month or so, of all the hostages and a complete ceasefire of military engagement and perhaps some level of normalcy and decency can be going on in the Middle East, which has always been a hotbed and a tinderbox. And who's to say that this recent agreement will have any more legs than any other, but we could use a win here for the world. And this is certainly a win if this does hold. And the hostages are released, those who are both still alive, and sadly those who probably, and there's been an acknowledgement that there have been hostages who have died in the captivity of being held hostage for the last 15 months, which I think was inevitable, regardless of what kind of conditions they were held in, possible torture, who knows what's going on. I don't know if we'll ever get the real story of what happened, but clearly with so many people taken of various age groups, who knows what kind of health these people were in at the time. They were taken randomly, indiscriminately. I'm sure some people needed medication on a regular basis that they probably didn't get. I don't think that the captors were coming down the line and saying, okay, who needs high blood pressure pills? And who needs, I can only imagine. So sadly, while the hostages will be released, this will not be a totally release of all living hostages. Some will sadly be released as deceased. Unlike the hostage taking back in 1979, and then it ended in 80, or actually 81, January 20th of 81, to be precise. Seems how a lot of things get done quickly, doesn't it? That's the weird thing is in the human world, we need a deadline. We need a deadline. Or we don't act. We are procrastinators. I'm not saying that this ceasefire wouldn't have happened. It's been long enough. Both sides have lost tremendous amounts of, I don't even know what the word is, I guess, collateral damage, casualties, property, unrest, fear. Emotional as well as physical loss happening over the last 15 months. This is that whole situation, the Hamas attack, the Israeli response, just mired in a swirl of negativity all around. And so hopefully this is off the world stage. But I can't help but think that part of it was influenced by the fact that, Joe Biden's presidency was ending on January 20th, and that deal was struck, I believe, on the 15th, just 5 days before he leaves. Interesting, don't you think? So, I don't know. You tell me. But was it a coincidence, or was the Biden side, or were both sides? Is Hamas worried about what Donald Trump might do, knowing that he is a staunch ally of Israel? Might they be fearing what with a full fledged ally of Israel? Biden was kind of always vacillating. And so maybe Hamas said, well, we better get this done before Donald Trump gets in. Who knows? Or was it just a diplomatic process that, for whatever reason, coincidentally, took this long until 5 days before the outgoing administration came to an end? I don't know. That seems a little coincidental. It was ironic, if you know your history books, especially with Jimmy Carter's recent death here, it was back in the news that, as I said, the Iranian hostages that were taken in 1979 were released minutes after Ronald Reagan was officially inaugurated into office. Literally minutes after the oath of office was taken, Iran released the hostages. It was almost kind of a, I don't know if it was a snub at Jimmy Carter, if it was a sense of fear of Ronald Reagan. I don't know what it was, but it was interesting how that crisis ended on Inauguration Day. And now we have another Mideast hostage terrorist crisis that ends days before another inauguration. And interesting how both of those happened during Democratic administrations, and both were ended on the inauguration of Republican presidents taking over. Once again, I don't know. If I'm just stating the facts, it's up. You can decide whatever you want, but just stating the facts. Interesting symmetry there. So thankfully, that is one of the optimistic things. But as we know, this year 2025 has started in rather a crazy way. We literally woke up hearing about the New Orleans terrorist massacre, as well as the Las Vegas incident that seemed less about terrorism, but still was a somewhat of a terrorist act, and people were hurt. I don't know if anybody died. Excuse me, in the Vegas incident, 14 people died in the New Orleans, and several dozen injured. So that was a fun way to wake up to the new year. And then, of course, a week later, the L.A. fires take place on January 7th and January 8th, pretty much and the 9th, that 2 or 3 day, really the 7th and then the 8th were major times when the fierceness of that fire and those winds and the destruction took place within those couple of days. It was a weird birthday for me. As I've told you, my birthday was on January 8th. And it was kind of an odd day to celebrate. It's not that I had a big party or anything, but I spent a lot of the evening watching the news and watching the fires go out of control and causing such horrific destruction to people's lives and property and spirit. Especially in the Pacific Palisades and the Altadena area and other areas near Los Angeles. So that was an odd birthday. That was a scary kind of thing, which, you know, the effects of that fire will be felt for many, many years. That's going to be a huge project, no matter how optimistic the leaders of California may be in terms of bouncing back and rebuilding, if that's even possible. That's going to be a very long process of clearing the debris, of replanning what goes on, rethinking how it's done. You know, do they rightfully now bury the electrical lines in that area, since they're basically dealing with a clean slate of land? Tens of thousands of acres destroyed, much of it urban, houses, communities, streets, schools, churches, businesses, private residences, public housing, who knows, you name it. It's a clean slate. That's not going to be, it's, you know, in a year we're not going to see Pacific Palisades being visited by tourists anytime soon. That's That's just the reality of it, folks. And everybody wants to, you know, hope that this can happen. And it may happen. But look at what's going on in Hawaii. It's been over a year that that fire came. I was just in Hawaii about last month. We couldn't even go to that area of Lahaina that burned down more than a year ago. They're still removing the debris from that horrendous fire. So, and this dwarfs that. Or that was dwarfed by the, I mean, the Lahaina fire was dwarfed by the destruction that's taken place in Los Angeles. So that was weird. And then we got the somewhat, as I said, hopefully, fingers crossed, good news, any kind of peace agreement in the Middle East is always tenuous. And that's just not, that's not opinion, that's reality. There have been many ceasefires and many agreements that have been agreed to and then have not held. And that's why there's such turmoil in that part of the country. But that's the one good piece of news. And now we have inauguration. And some people are dreading the inauguration of in the second term of President Trump. And some people are looking forward to it. Once again, I'm not here to pass judgment, but I'm just saying that's the reality. And so we'll see what happens. There's a change in the government. You can look at it as positive or negative, but once again, another big story. So huge, huge happenings in 2025 right out of the gate. At this rate, like, wow, what's going to happen by in this country by April? they've already started to compile the information for the year in reviews for 2025. It's already, if what happened all, if what happened in January had happened throughout the next 12 months, every one of those stories would have been one of the biggest stories of the year. If, say, the New Orleans incident had happened in January and the fires had happened in April and, you know, the peace agreement happened in August and whatever, those would have been among the biggest stories of the year. Even if they were stretched out over the next 12 months, they all happened within 1 month, within 3 weeks. As well as I said, a shift in power in the United States. That's another big story. That's the only one that we knew about for sure that was going to happen. Most people, you know, after the holidays, you go, well, you know, and that's only once every 4 years. So this year it's like, well, yeah, okay, you know, there'll be the, everybody talks about the holidays. And then don't forget, January 20th, there will be an inauguration. So, you know, there's some big news. The inauguration at this point is almost, I mean, it's going to be a big deal. There's no question, but it almost pales in comparison to what's happened since the beginning of the year. So we can only imagine what's going on. If things keep up at this rate, yeah, strap in, hold on. Hopefully there's more positives than negatives, but wow, this has been quite a year so far. 2025 is already memorable, and we're not even through the first month. We're not even through the first 3 weeks. But I wanted to talk about the LA fires because this is something that I have spoken about many times on the podcast through the years. In May of this year will be year number 9. So be our 9th year, and throughout and within this year, we most likely will be hitting episode number 500. In May of 2016, we started this this podcast, and so 9 years in May. So wow, but I've talked about that this quite a bit. And it's come to roost once again. And so this is not an I told you so. This is a reminder and really hopefully a call to action, not only for for each of us, but for our political leaders, our governmental leaders. The LA fires are horrific. There's no more words to describe it. We've heard them all over the last several weeks. Apocalyptic, devastating, decimating. As I said before, horrific. You can't, whatever negative, epic, in a bad way, whatever word you want to use to describe these in terms of sad, maybe the biggest, the easiest and perhaps the most descriptive. But we want to try to be out of this loss, this tremendous loss and pain and destruction. We want to at least find some way to move forward, some way to be optimistic, and some way to find some positive out of this. And that is not easy. When you look at the pictures of the destruction that these fires in the California, Los Angeles area have done since January 7th, it boggles the mind. And I hope that even on some, and once again, look, I'm a news guy. I'm a news hound. I'm a news junkie. So yeah, to me, I'm watching this stuff. I'm up on it. I'm watching the reports. I'm watching the footage. I'm listening. I'm into this. I've talked to some friends who, when they were happening, even that week, were just kind of casually aware. They knew that something was going on, but they really weren't. So it's up to everybody. I don't put anybody down. That's the way some people are. Some people are. I mean, as I said, I have a journalistic background. I'm a news junkie. So to me, this was a big deal. So I've been engrossed in this, and so it's hard to have watched all this unfold as I have, and not get a little angry, but also then at the same time look to say, what is the lesson here? And for me, the lesson, and it's not that I'm the only one calling for this. And I don't think it's too soon. I mean, these fires are still a problem. And as I said before, the cleanup and the rebuilding of this is a multi-year, if not decade, kind of project here, folks. I'm not the first one to talk about this. And I don't think it's too soon, because what I'm talking about is, how do we not let this happen, not just in California again? Obviously, people that live there and the people that it's affected want to say, hey, this can never happen here again. And that is where the priority should be. But I have to tell you that wherever you live, wherever you're listening, now I'm in the Chicago area, in Illinois, and when I see that what happened in California, I think of, you know, I mean, first I have sympathy and empathy for the people that are going through such a terrible tragedy. But then I also think about, well, what would I do if I was in a similar situation? Now, granted, in Chicago, in Illinois, we're not going to have wildfires like they do. We don't have mountains and foliage and ocean breezes torrential winds like the Santa Ana winds. We don't have those natural occurrences, but we have just as many destructive natural occurrences here. Ask anybody who lives in Plainfield, Illinois, about the forces of nature that come through Illinois. Tornadoes, snowstorms, blizzards, Arctic freezing, floods. We have our share right here. And everybody throughout this country, wherever you live, whether it's north, south, east, or west, you may not have the identical problems that occur and the natural threats that occur on the West Coast or in the California area. But if you look at wherever you live in this country, because I have no idea where you're listening from, but you certainly are aware that you have threats to your safety due to nature. Look at what happened in North Carolina. People that live in Florida, hurricanes. North Carolina wound up getting the brunt of those hurricanes. They never in their wildest dreams expected that they would have been the danger zone. If you watched any of that, and I did, I have friends that live in the Florida area, just as I have friends that live in the California area. And that's another reason why I was so interested in seeing what was happening, as well as I'm a fan of California. I visit California quite a bit, have and always will. I love California. And I was, and there were some areas that were affected by those fires, of which I am, have visited. I know fairly well. I don't live out there, but I know people who do. So I did feel some kind of a connection to it. But my point is, wherever you live, there are natural threats based on the weather that can threaten you. Whether it was a flood or a mudslide in North Carolina because of the high winds from the and the rain from the hurricane. As I said, they never even expected. When they were hearing about this hurricane about to hit the Florida coast, people in North Carolina were certainly not ready for what would hit in Asheville and places like that, which are still struggling. That's what I'm saying. All of these things that happen, these disasters, nature caused, human caused, whatever the cause, they've been aided by nature. And so if there's one thing, if there's one positive that we can take from this, is that proclamation that this never happens again, but not only in California, but everywhere, in terms of the amount of loss and devastation. That's what never can happen again. And the key word is prevention. And I have talked about this for so many years. I've talked about it here on the podcast every so often when something has come up. But I've been talking about this for decades, just within my own little social circles, of how we as a country, especially, and to some extent we as a world, but United States really, and it's just, and I notice it more because obviously I live here, is that we are a reactive society. We are not a preventive society. We don't spend time preventing things, which leads to us spending a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of money and experiencing losses of property and devastating losses of life because we didn't prevent. And we have to react to tragedies that happened because we didn't act beforehand. I remember when I first devised this kind of philosophy or whatever it is, and I was a young guy. I was in my 20s. Supposed to be thinking about bigger issues at the time, right? You know? But as I said, I'm kind of a news junkie, so I've always been watching the news and having, reactions to it. And I remember in my mid-20s, early 20s, about 1987 or so, there was a terrible tragedy that happened in Texas. And there was a little baby. I don't know how old she was. I don't even, 1 or 2 years old. Baby Jessica. Now, some people don't even know what I'm talking about. Google this. This is what Google is for. This is what Google is for. Not some of the BS that you're using Google for. This is what Google is for. In about, I know it was 87, in Texas somewhere, a little baby girl fell into a well pipe. Fell into a well, into a pipe of a well. Somewhere, I don't know if it was on her house or somewhere, but it was somewhere where she could get to. I mean, she was barely, 2 years old. I didn't even know if she could walk. I don't remember how it happened, but she fell into this well. And this became a national story. I mean, this was an hour-by-hour story. And it didn't last all that long. Thankfully, it was like maybe, it was 3 or 4 days, something like that, if I remember. But it was constant. It was 24 hours. And it wasn't just on CNN and things like that. It was on the networks, too. This was huge. This was a little baby girl caught in a well. It had all the earmarks of a Lassie episode, and you can Google that too. And so the goal here was that we've got to save this little girl. They had the parents on, and they're distraught, and they had workers there around the clock. It was, a little baby. She can't really do anything. She can't yell for help. It's a baby. She can't even talk probably. And she's in this well, it had all the earmarks of one of these tragic stories that the hope was that if they did finally get her out of there, that she would be alive. And so there was a sad part of this that was a little morbid kind of a thing, because you just never knew what was going to happen. As I said, it was at least 2 or 3 days, if not more. And ultimately, thankfully, baby Jessica in 87 was rescued. And miraculously, she wasn't seriously injured. I think that ultimately... I think she had to have a toe amputated or something. I can't remember now. But it really was a story of, once again, great reaction. There's no one in the world, there's no country in the world that reacts more and comes together more than the United States in one of these kind of crises like this. I know other people around the world all do, but there's something about the American spirit, as divided as this country is, especially now politically, and it has been divided since its inception. When we have these huge, huge human tragedies, somehow we are able to put aside our differences and our divisions, and we come to the aid of our fellow man. We do that very well. No question. We're great reactors. And I remember, as I said, now being in my early 20s when this happened, and saying, well, this is great, but when you find out that, well, what? Why was this well unprotected so that a 2-year-old kid can fall in it? I mean, what was going, yes, this was an amazing rescue effort. Tireless, 24 hours a day, workers were there, they were battling, in the dark, you know, just never stopping, completely focused to get this baby out, whatever it took. First responders from all over the area. Just a Herculean effort to do this. A little baby girl, you know, doesn't really even probably know what's going on. The fear factor, the health factor. It had every aspect to tug at your heart. But while it was going on, and especially after it ended, my takeaway was now that, okay, she's alive, that's great. We had a happy ending. I think baby Jessica is still alive, I'm sure now at this point. She's probably, she's almost 40 years old. But I remember watching this unfold, and then, like I said, very, of course, pleased that it ended in a positive way. But my thing is, why was this well open? Why was the opportunity for her to fall in it a reality? Why wasn't this well, which I don't think was being used, why wasn't this covered? Why was this open? Why was she able to fall into this? Prevention. Someone dropped the ball, whether it was whoever's house this well was on, that this thing wasn't closed for safety. Or was it a municipal thing? Shouldn't there have been some government agency that knew that this well was no longer being used, or it was a health or it was a safety hazard, and there should have been somebody saying, hey, fix this thing or you're going to get fined $10,000. There should have been some kind of preventive measure that would have cost very little and would have not only saved hundreds of thousands of dollars that it took to put this rescue on, but also affect this child and the family and whenever. Why create a possible hazard that could be possibly not only take somebody's life, but also, not only and cost money, but also perhaps even take away the lives of the people who were trying to rescue her. You don't know how much a tragedy like that begins to have so many tentacles. And all that had to happen before was that this well or this pipe or whatever it was should have been covered or taken out or something. No, and then if that happens, no tragedy. No tragedy. And when you start to hear what's been going on in the California fires, you say, somebody has dropped the ball here. And you hear about why wasn't there more preventive measures happening? This was somewhat predicted. Yes, there were some nature elements to this that no one could have overcome. The Santa Ana winds coming in at 70, 80, 90 miles an hour. But we have to question whether the sparks for that fire could have been prevented. And at the very least, even if the sparks couldn't have been prevented, the extent of what the damage that these fires could have been prevented if things like getting rid of regular burns in the area to get rid of all these shrubs that were sitting there that were under this drought area that were just a tinderbox waiting to burn. For whatever reason, not having enough water. For whatever reason, not sending out the danger signals to the people in the area earlier. There were a lot of breakdowns. There was not a lot of prevention. There was not a lot of thinking ahead. And the more I watched the information about these wildfires, the more I was shocked to learn. I don't live on the West Coast. I'm not aware of the usual and regular threats of wildfires and things like that that are part of people's lives. I wasn't aware. I mean, I know that there are wildfires in California every year. There's a wildfire season. Most of the time, we've been lucky in that most of these fires have taken place in wooded areas, away from populations, not near big wooded areas. I mean, not near big populated areas like this with populations of tens of thousands of people. There have been wildfires that have taken people's property and lives, but for the most part, they've been in very remote areas and they haven't been on the scale of this. I mean, I hope you've been able to watch some of this. I mean, they've shown photos that compared the aftermath of the bombing of Hiroshima in World War II and what it looked like to the aftermath of these fires in Pacific Palisades, and there wasn't much of a difference. It looked like a war zone, like a bomb went off. That's the kind of utter destruction and devastation that these wildfires have had, especially in the Pacific Palisades and Altadena. And so you look at this and you start to hear that these fires are commonplace. The people that live in these areas are very used to having fires. It's a part of their reality. I didn't realize just how common they are and how common they start and are extinguished to the point where people say, oh, well, there's a wildfire. I can see it in the distance. And then it's either put out by the firemen or it dies out by itself. But one of our biggest problems is not only our lack of prevention, but our complacency. We are so complacent. We don't, as I said, but it's all tied to prevention. We are not a preventive society. We like to go, and I've used this analogy many times. If you listen to me over the years, you might be saying, I remember you talking about this. Yeah, we like to go at the shiny object. That's where our attention goes. If everything, if nothing negative is happening or wrong, we don't do anything to prevent it. We just keep our fingers crossed. I've been hearing stories from that are now coming out from firemen in this area in California that have basically said, before this destruction happened, well, there were other wildfires that were around that area. And they said, well, there have been many occasions where we have said to ourselves after we fought one of these fires, wow, we got lucky this time. If the wind was blowing just a little more in the other direction, that would have gone right down into those populated areas. Well, we got lucky. Well, we got lucky. Well, you can't keep saying that, because ultimately your luck is going to run out. But that's the way we do business, especially our governments. We don't like to fix things before they break. We let them break, and then we have a tragedy. We spend 10 times, we have no question about cost. Everybody talks about budgets. You know, we always hear about the budgets, and there's this cut in budgets. We don't have money in money. We don't have money. We don't have money. We don't have money. We have to cut here, cut here, cut here, cut here. But then when there's a tragedy, for some reason, there's a spigot. There's some spigot that we turn on, and money comes flowing. I mean, this tragedy in Los Angeles is going to cost hundreds of billions with a B dollars, not millions, hundreds of billions of dollars when 15,000 structures ultimately might destroyed in this. Whole cities have to be rebuilt. Utilities have to be restored. Electricity, gas, you name it. First, all the debris has to be removed. That's going to take a year, if not more. I looked this up. I wanted to see how long, after they were making these comparisons to Hiroshima and what it looks like, what it looked like, and the devastation that took place in 1945 when we dropped the bomb to end World War II. And when Hiroshima was back to quote unquote normal, whatever normal means, but to a point where the destruction of the bomb wasn't as, you know, at least physically, wasn't as obvious. When buildings were back, when services were back, when people were back, when life was back to normal in that city. And while, yes, they removed the debris, they opened streets and things like that, things happened in the short term. To get back to where the city was a thriving area, like it was to some extent before that, wasn't for at least 20 years, in the early 60s. 15 to 20 years. Now, I'm sure that nobody wants to say that right now, because it's such a horrific time, and people are wanting it back to normal. But there's going to be a dose of reality that's going to have to hit here soon. And that's the reality. And that's why it is imperative that this doesn't happen again. And what I mean by this, not just this in terms of wildfires decimating populated areas in the California area, but I mean major tragedies that may be somewhat weather and nature related, but regardless, wherever they are. If I was Donald Trump taking office today, this week, in the aftermath of that tragedy in California, I would call a meeting with all 50 governors of every state, and I would have them come in to meet with me. First, I'd meet with them together, and then I would meet with them individually. And the message that I would send is, what are you doing as governor, as the head of your state, responsible for millions of people in some states, several hundred thousand at the very least in others? What are you doing to make sure that a similar tragedy, given whatever your particular threats are in your state, based on your geography, based on your typography, based on where you are and how weather affects you, what are some of your biggest threats and concerns? And what are you doing to prevent those from happening? Granted, again, it was a perfect storm that happened in California. You had these winds, you had this fire burning, you had the embers, and it went into an urban populated area. There's no way, really, that the firemen had a chance. But perhaps if there was more warning, perhaps if there was more preventive work done to remove a lot of the shrubs that were a potential tinderbox in this area, if there was better notification, if there were better allocations of water resources, it certainly could have been mitigated. The extent of the damage, the extent of the destruction, the extent of the human loss of property and life could have been mitigated. Maybe not eliminated, but mitigated with prevention. And you say, well, why is that Donald Trump's or the president's fault. Because at the end of the day, who do you think is going to pay for what's happening in California right now? California is not going to be able to pay to get all this fixed and done. The federal government is going to wind up paying a majority of this tab, whether they tell you it or not. We are going to pay for that. Just as we are paying for what happened in Katrina, what's happened in what happens in Florida, what happens with floods, what happens in Lahaina, the federal government ultimately pays a huge price tag through FEMA, through emergency funds, whatever it is. So yeah, that is the president's job. Because ultimately, he's going to wind up paying for it. And that is the Congress's job. Because they're going to wind up paying for it. We are going to wind up paying for it. It's going to be a federal problem. Even though it happened locally, we all are going to pay for that. So, yeah, you know what? I look at what happened in California as something that Joe Biden, that was under his watch. He's president. He's okaying the funds, at least up to this point. He doesn't have much. He doesn't have any time now. But when it happened, it was his job to say, we are going to give whatever California needs. That's his job. That's California. That's federal. That's a federal edict by the president of the United States. So, yeah, you know what? He should have talked to Gavin Newsom before and said, what are you doing to prevent wildfires getting into the Los Angeles area? Well, you know, that the odds of that, that does, no, I don't want to hear about the odds. Because you know what? Long shots happen. Ask any horse player. Long shots do come in sometime. I don't care what the odds are. You can't keep your fingers crossed. You can't say, "Well, we dodged a bullet there. We crossed our fingers and we got lucky." You can't just keep waiting on luck. You have to take proactive measures. And as I said, we don't like to do that, especially our governmental leaders and our politicians, because you know what? Prevention is not sexy. Prevention is not exciting. If we say we're gonna spend $20 million to remove the dead shrubs from the mountain areas in California where the Santa Ana winds usually blow. And here's a guy with a chainsaw. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to send out all these crews over the next year to make sure that all the dead shrubs that would be a potential tinderbox for a fire will be removed. Okay, is that exciting? If you're a politician to announce that? People say, well, you mean there's no wildfires and you're going to spend $20 million on something that might happen? We need that $20 million for something that's happening right now. Okay, so that's $20 million that maybe we would have spent. A lot of money. Is $20 million better to spend than $200 billion, which we will spend? That's the thing. We turn the spigot on when we could have solved the problem by paying for what money it cost to solve the problem before it becomes a catastrophe. But we wait until the catastrophe. We go to where the shiny object is. Oh, there's this problem that's more sexy to talk about. From a politician standpoint, it's no fun to stand up at some kind of press conference or photo op with the press there and the cameras there and say, we're going to cut down all the dead shrubs that have become potential hazards because of the drought that we're in. We're going to spend $20 million and we're going to have all these people out there with chainsaws to cut all these shrubs and remove them so that errant ambers may not ignite them and start a potential fire that could, if the winds are blowing in the right way, come into highly populated areas like Pacific Palisades and Altadena and Burbank and other places. We want to prevent that. So we're taking proactive, preventive moves to do that. I don't know if the press would even come out. I don't know if they'd even show it on television. And you have people in the community complaining that you are building, you are spending all this money to prevent something that might not happen when there's something happening right now that needs your attention. Yeah, I'm not discounting whatever you're talking about that needs. We've got a lot of problems. There's no question about that. But if you live in an area where wildfires are a normal, regular, natural occurrence, they're a part of your life, and that you are around densely populated areas, that's a problem that needs attention, just like whatever this other problem you're saying is a dire problem, if not more. Look at the destruction that it caused. And it wasn't discriminatory. It attacked rich and poor. Could that have been prevented completely? Perhaps not. But did it need to be as destructive as it was? No. But the steps to prevent something like that were not taken. Just like the steps were not taken to close the well that baby Jessica fell in 1987. Prevention. Politicians would rather have a press conference to talk about, we're going to build a new building here. We've got golden shovels to show we're breaking ground. And we've got giant scissors to cut the ribbon that we're opening this beautiful building that we just built. Or we've got this... We're on this site. We've got this beautiful artist rendering of this new complex. Whoa, that's sexy. Beautiful pictures of a new building. Golden shovels of moving dirt to say we are making progress. Or even better yet, showing the progress with the giant scissors to cut the ribbon. Here's the building we built. Here's your money at work. That's sexy. Your money at work, sending people up into the highest parts of the hills and mountains of California to remove shrubbery with chainsaws. No one sees it. It's not sexy. And there's not a fire happening now, so we don't need to do that. But then when something bad happens, whoa, do we go into crisis mode. And there is no expense spared. And we can't continue to do that, because we can debate whether what causes climate change. But I think we can all agree that the climate is changing. Now, as I've said before, I think the biggest culprit of climate change is human beings, but not our behavior. Our mere existence. There's 8 billion of us on this planet. And this planet never had 8 billion of us on it before. And we know that this planet has gone through huge climate changes in its million years of history. We've had ice ages and we've had everything else. And we've supposedly had meteors hit this. We have gone through several catastrophic climate related events on this planet, and we will continue. But we're the problem, because we exist. Not from what we're doing, but the fact that there's this many people on the earth and the way we use up resources. Yeah, there's a connection somewhere, but our mere existence is the problem. I've said this many times. The most arrogant fact, the most arrogant slogan is save the planet. That premise is flawed. because it means that we humans think that we can save the planet. We can't. The planet rules us. It just showed us again in a most devastating way. Nature is in control. We don't. We're not. The planet is in control. We are just here. This planet can get rid of us very quickly if it wanted to. We are not in charge. We can't save the planet. We need to do what we can do to save ourselves, to save our species, to save humans. Yeah, we can do that by preventing things. Nature is going to do what it does, and it's doing it more often now, as we're seeing. And so we have to change our mindset, and we have to be more prevented, more preventive. We can't just say, well, that's the way it is. We can't keep spending. Think about in the last year alone, just off the top of my head here, I'm not even really talking about like doing major research. Like, well, how many natural disasters have we had, and how much have we paid out? I'm forgetting a lot of other tornadoes and hurricanes that have hit rural areas and or even populated urban areas. I'm just going to name. Let's just name three of the biggest devastating ones in the last year and a half: Lahaina in Hawaii, the hurricane that just destroyed and had such major destruction throughout Florida, and then into North Carolina and Asheville and things like that, and now California. What I would love to see what the price tag has been on what the federal government has paid out. And like I said, don't even talk about, we're not even throwing in the major destruction of New Orleans when the levees broke after Katrina or Hurricane Sandy. I'm just talking about the last 24 months. It does impact the entire country. It is a national problem. It's not a local problem. It's a national problem. And we better start looking at it as a national problem. As I said, I would challenge President Trump to have that meeting. I would challenge every governor and mayor of a hugely populated area to have that meeting. In Illinois, for example, I challenge right now, in the aftermath of what's gone on in California, if Governor Pritzker of Illinois and Mayor Johnson of Chicago, almost 3 million people in Chicago, what, 16, 17 million in Illinois? That's a lot of people. We have our natural threats. We have tornadoes, floods, cold weather, blizzards, ice, freezing. We have weather-related catastrophes. If anybody's old enough to remember the snowstorm we had here in 1979, because of horrible, unprepared management of the city by the then mayor, Michael Belandic, this city was closed for a week because we got hit with 20 inches of snow and they didn't know how to get it plowed. And this city was literally closed for a week. Streets, alleys, major streets, side streets. It looked like Antarctica. I remember I was in high school. It was unbelievable. Bad management. No preparation. No prevention. Perfect storm? Yes. Would there have been problems? Certainly. But it shouldn't have shut down the city for a week like it did. Prevention. I hope we learn a lesson. I fear we won't. I fear there will be another catastrophe somewhere. that may have weather-related implications. And we're going to see, sadly, that it's going to do major damage, and we're going to probably see that it could have been at least lessened with some prevention. We better start to change our point of view. We better look to be proactively preventing things than being reactive to after they happen. Because we're seeing more and more weather-related incidences. And we're still living by some old mindset. And we can't do that anymore. So I would urge every governor and every mayor of every major city and every state in this union to have a meeting with every department head and every agency that supplies services to you, gas, electricity, every department that provides services to the people, and ask each department, what is your biggest fear for what you do to this? What did you provide for this city? What's your biggest problem? What's the phone call you don't want to get at 3 a.m? And I guarantee you they all have an answer. And then my next question would be, and what are you doing to make sure you don't get that call? Because that's your new number one priority. Preventing what your biggest fear is from happening. Let's eliminate the problem before it happens. Let's not react after it happens, because then we are in a no-win situation. We can lose people's lives, losing property. The psychological impact of this, you think the people in California aren't, forget about their property, forget about the sad part of losing potentially family members or friends, but think about each person that's gone through this, the emotional impact to know that your life as you know it, all your memories, your house is gone, and all your contents, things that cannot be recovered, things that you maybe even thought about in years, but you knew you had them, and at least there was some comfort in knowing that you had your grandma's pictures or your deceased parents' jackets or coats or the cards that you made them or whatever you had, or your kids' drawings, whatever it is. You might not have looked at them in years, but you knew you had them, and there was some comfort to that, and those are gone. That is a scar. That is a wound that will take years if it ever gets healed. Why are we inflicting that on ourselves and on our fellow citizens when we can do things to mitigate it? I'm not saying that you can stop them from happening, but you can at least lessen the extent and the damage and the destruction that these natural disasters do. We need to start to get ahead of things as opposed to just react. We're spending billions of dollars because of our own ineptness, of our own denial, of our own fingers crossed attitude. Prevention. Prevention. It's been a interesting 2025 so far. Let's hope the next 11 months are a lot less eventful and a lot less devastating. And let's hope that we learned a lesson in the next 11 months. We start to see and hear and act in a more preventative way. So the destruction that's happened in California this month won't not only happen again out there, but similar kinds of destruction won't happen in other cities, in other states, in this country. Let's make 2025 the year that we wake up. Let's make 2025 the year that we started to prevent. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic.
Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 452. I'm Jim Tarano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.